Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
I love the way he says that. So what's happening is another episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. I'm Brady Wright with the Lord of Everything Mechanical, Mr. Shane Osborne.
Howdy.
And Steve, the producer, Johan, the guy whose picture is in the dictionary when you look up the word Leadfoot. Back to the blacktop is first. It's where we check out what's happening in the automotive world. We got a bunch of topical stuff that Steve has spared no expense to collect for our edification this afternoon.
Well, I wonder if that's any relationship to Leadbetter or any of those guys.
No, it's better. It's better when you're Leadfoot.
Yes. Steve Leadfoot, Johan.
Leadbelly.
Yeah. Leadbelly and all that stuff. Good. Well, I was thinking, you know, the top 10 most important cars to be built and sold in America.
The top 10 most important?
Yes. The Studebaker National Museum.
Hot Wheels?
Clearly.
Yeah, I love Hot Wheels. Maybe I'll put my display up in the office here someday. They went out, the Studebaker Museum, National Museum, went out and said, we want to get a vote, everybody on our mailing list
they
and everybody, all the perfection. They took a poll.
Right.
And they said, what are the top 10 most important vehicles to be built?
So this is not just Studebakers. It could be anybody.
Yeah, and I don't think Studebaker even made it. So
I think they were pretty important.
You got the Camaros and the Mustangs.
Well,
yeah. Pony cars.
Yep.
Well, it's a little top tier. We're top tier, the best coming into. So bottom line is cars that made a difference, that set a trend, that were landmarks within the automotive industry, not just a Camaro or a Corvette.
The Pinto. No.
Grimlin? Okay, Ford Model T. We're talking.
Because if you let us go, this will go right down the
Pacer.
Drain.
Pacer.
Sure. Yeah. So the Model T.
Okay, Ford Model T.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Volkswagen Beetle.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
Yep.
World War II Jeep.
Sure.
Yeah, Willys.
Basically, think about this. The World War II Jeep took all those motorcycles and pretty much got rid of them because they didn't need a motorcycle once you had a Jeep because of the ability to drive anywhere with those little things.
And take it apart with a set of open-end wrenches.
Yeah, exactly. And then the fourth one, what do you think, now that we've kind of lined it up, Model T, Volkswagen Beetle, World War II Jeep, what do you think the fourth one
the
is?
The Chrysler minivan.
You're right.
Ha!
Thanks to Lee Iacocca.
Yeah.
He set a whole new trend.
Yep.
And
1984.
The rest of them, they couldn't figure out.
What?
They had a
top 10 list that had four in it?
Yeah, the rest of them, they said basically the rest of them came in too close, that it was kind of a toss-up between the rest, but the top four totally outpaced everything else.
Well, I think that's reasonably fair.
Yeah.
Although they didn't put the Tucker in there.
Yeah, or the station wagon.
The station wagon.
I thought the station wagon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The station wagon was the precursor to
the pickup truck.
Yeah, the Suburban, the SUV.
The SUV, yeah.
Because these are trends. These are trends.
Well, and look at you got to have the pickup truck.
Pickup truck would be probably.
They
had the Model T truck, did they not?
Well, yes, the Model T came with a truck bed, yeah.
Yeah.
It came with it just about anything you wanted.
So you basically covered the bases right there. The Model T was the first dual car. It had the car and it had the truck.
Well, and the first mass-produced.
That's right.
As well. Henry Ford was responsible for the production line, the automated production line.
So anyway, I thought that was very interesting. And minivan, it's like, you're right. The minivan changed everything. Lee Iacocca got that idea, and boom, it changed. But they are being phased out. There's not a lot of minivans out there anymore, and now the SUVs are coming around.
Well, the Honda Odyssey is still there.
Yeah, and the Volkswagen just came out with the new Volkswagen van.
That's right.
Oh, they did?
Yes.
Yeah, there are a few.
It was released the auto show just last year.
How long has it been, though, since Volkswagen had a new van?
They stopped making the Euro van in 96.
Yeah.
There you go. See? Yeah. See,
and I don't know whether you call vehicles like,
or
you know, the Mazda CX-9, the Ford Edge, those things, same chassis, same platform.
Right.
I don't know if you call those minivans, you're really going to call them SUVs or crossovers.
Right.
But they're crossover from the minivan and...
They just have a little more
like
of a snout
Honda Pilot
to them and everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
interesting.
speaking of minivans, yes. The future of Chrysler and Dodge brands. I thought this was interesting that there we had said this last week's show, but during the day-long session in Milan, Italy, earlier this month, Fiat Chrysler Automobile senior management team offered an in-depth look at the company's next five-year plan.
Oh, right.
But they focused all but exclusively on four global FCA brands, Jeep, Ram, Alfa Romeo, and Maserati.
Yeah.
Raising more questions than answers about the company's two other U.S. divisions, Chrysler and Dodge.
Right.
And while the fate of Chrysler brand appears to be far from certain, there's more far from more opportunity for Dodge. It appears maybe the muscle cars. But think about it. It may be the demise of Chrysler and Dodge as we know it.
Well, you know, money is tight in the car business now. And
it really is.
They're only going to manufacture things that are going to sell. The muscle cars, the Dodge, you know, muscle cars, they are selling hand over fist. Even the, you know, the medium-powered ones.
Oh, yeah.
And that's what's driving that end of the mark. So you're going to be crazy to get rid of them. The Chrysler, on the other hand, they haven't been as exciting because everybody's jumping down on the Challengers and the Chargers.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that got me thinking about why it is that we enjoy...
And, of course, the Rams, I should have said.
And the Rams.
Yeah.
And why is it that we love going to car shows and seeing the old cars? And we see an old car on the road, and my wife's all, oh, look, kids. Ooh, they look up from their electronics. What? It's a Model T, or it's a 57-something or other. It's because...
I had one of those.
that whole era of Chrysler and Dodge and Ford and Chevy, it's well, not the, what it used to be.
And all the styling exercises, and literally
that's
the
exactly
competition
right.
between the manufacturers. Who's going to make the coolest slash, you know, most advanced vehicle this year? And they had literally several years where they made a different style, a different
every
design
year.
Every mm-hmm. year.
Matter of fact, I was down there, I was showing my son, I says, okay, Noah, when you look at, here's the 60s, much more boxy. And then but some of them, like definitely the Fords, lot of bend work in the panels.
Stuff, yeah.
Oh my
yeah.
goodness, beautiful.
Yeah, the coach work was truly amazing.
Yeah, just the coach work was amazing. Yeah. And I went, but now look, at about 66, 67, boom, it goes away. And now it's more roundy, and it's preparing for 68, which was the new more rounded, lot less. And I go, mm-hmm. from that point on, everything went roundy because the cost of
well, until they hit about 72, and then everything got boxy again. And yep.
But they didn't do all
away.
The coach work.
That's true.
They did not do all the coach work. Could you look at the size of some of that stuff, and you're like, how did they even do that?
Trust me, I replicate it on a daily basis. It's not easy.
It's beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
It's a work of art.
It is. Some of the complicated compound curves are
oh, yeah.
just unbelievable, trying to replicate them.
Like an early 63 Buick yeah. or something, or a 63 Ford Galleon or something
the
like that.
The Cadillac Eldorados. The 57, 8, 9, mm-hmm. you know, some of those. Yeah, amazing. I mean,
yeah.
really
but just the
difficult.
Standard small mid-sized yeah. car. That,
the 62 yeah. convertible we have, Buick convertible we have. It's full of all kinds of reverse curves.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's beautiful. So you look at that and my sons go, okay, I get it. And I go, just look, here's the Chrysler, the Ford, the Chevy, and if they all kind of have that same look to them, mm-hmm. but their own unique look, but there's the, and he goes, oh, Dad, you're right. And he's now, he's,
well, it's more than just trim packaging and
oh,
and,
no,
and,
it's body,
and stuff
complete
too.
Body.
But the other, you know, the reason they did that is because back in the day, they used to make the Bucks and the you know, the concept and the styling exercises out of putty. You know,
yes.
they'd make them out of
clay.
And you could do anything you want because there was no limitation. And then to translate that into body work, to sheet metal work, they pretty soon realized that's hideously expensive.
Yep.
And you can't...
New tooling every
you
year.
Can't, yeah, you can't sell a car and make much of a profit if you get... So as soon as they started doing CAD... Then they went, well, you know, we could make these things with essentially the same body panels, you know, across three different platforms, you know, Cadillac, Buick, Chevrolet. We can change the trim, and it's a lot cheaper to make them. And,
well, that took off in the 70s.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's what kind of took coachwork away.
It really did. Well, we're going to be right back with more of the show, and we got some more to catch up on.
Yep, trivia question coming up, and a chat with Joel Blackstock from Sound Advice.
I guess we do have a guest. Good night, do we? For all your parts cleaning needs, turn to Ravenstone Vapor Honing. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is a fast, economical, safe alternative to standard media blasting. Ravenstone Vapor Honing uses a system developed by Rolls-Royce back in 1944, a water-based cleaning system that restores parts back to factory condition with no scouring or heating to metal or damage to rubber and plastic parts. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is located in Snohomish, Washington. For all your parts cleaning needs, turn to RavenstoneVaporHoning.com. Redefining the way parts restoration is done.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Dad!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil.
It only takes a moment to make a moment.
Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit Father.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school.
Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone.
Hey everyone, Steve Johan here, producer of the Horsepower Chrome and Rust Show. If any of you have ever thought about or ridden a motorcycle, then I want to invite you to listen to a new show called World of Motorcycling, where we cover rider culture and the motorcycling world. World of Motorcycling is an informative and entertaining podcast featuring John Davis, Walt Fletcher, and me, Steve Johan. You can listen to the show at worldofmotorcycling.podomatic.com, where we'll be waiting for you.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more alive.
We're back with the second segment of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. As usual, Brady, Steve, and Shane with you. Time for the windshield view. Lots of things going on around the Western Washington area.
Oh, yeah, there were a bunch.
Oh,
and
yes.
Of course, last weekend was, now if you're listening to this, it's the 10th, and we have passed the infestation.
Yes.
We talked about this last week.
Yes.
The infestation rat rod show was its 10th year. It's been 10 years since the Rat Bastards Car Club held their infestation at the Triple X Root Beer Drive-In in Issaquah. It's been lots of different places. But this year's show was epic. I mean, I think it was probably the best attended show that they have had in forever. I was out there from 6 o'clock in the morning until the show closed. We were literally packing up, you know, tables and stuff at the end of the show. And what a tremendous showing! All kinds. There were so many different rat rods out there. And just so that people understand, in case you're not a rat rod fan, a lot of people look at those cars and they say, yeah, you know, this is just a collection of junk, which is literally true, except there's quite a bit of mechanical ability in these things, and every single one of them is different from the one next to it. They're all art forms, and just because somebody, you know, decided that they're going to weld a dog head on top of the frame, remember, you know, that nobody else is doing that, so they do. Some really tremendous cars. Of course, Ron's out there with his car, Ron Foreman, the president of the Rat Bastards. But the slow drags were epic. A lot of people had not tried slow drags before, so there were a ton of people out there giving it a try. And we talked about this a little bit last week. You got three basic lines, you know, hoses or ropes on the ground, and you got
accelerate
about
to the first one.
Yeah, you got about 25 feet, 50 feet to accelerate your vehicle, however you want to do it, and then you got to coast from the second line to the final one, 100 yards. And whoever takes the longest but makes it across with the back tire across the third hose is the winner. And then it's time after that. And it was a hard-fought battle.
Well, Brady, I had to ask you, how many burgers did you put down?
Only one, but okay. It was the size of a hubcap. So
is that ate the big one?
Well, I didn't eat all of it, of course. You can't, but I did have a root beer float, and you know, Jose does a great job with a root beer float.
You know that for those who don't know, the Triple X root beer. I think there's one back east, and it's an original back there.
Yeah.
But it used to be a chain.
Yeah, yep.
And then it went away, and Jose picked this one up. And it still has the barrel. The iconic barrel with the Triple X markings on it. And he has done a phenomenal job of just, you go in there and there's thousands of paraphernalia all over the ceiling, the wall.
People go to that place just to get their picture taken.
And they got stickers.
In the dining room.
We
got
to get a sticker for our show so that we can put it on their window.
Well, we have several of our posters are up there. I put three or four of them up in the dining room. And I may have covered up somebody else's. I don't want to say, but there's plenty
of horsepower. But we'll get some stickers one of these days, and then we'll put the stickers there on the front door because they have the sticker door.
Yep. The other thing that was cool about the show, and we're kind of spending some time on this, but it's because they did such a great job. There were more cars than they've had in any of the other infestations, and Brenda Cavaretto and the Electric Pinup Dolls did a great pinup pageant. It was a hoot. They got standing ovations. Everybody had a grand time. And, of course, the pinups, you know, there's a lot of different versions of pinup. This is all family stuff. It was truly wonderful stuff. They were the starters and the cheering squad for the slow drags. And that right there was a show all by itself. And as we mentioned last week, the entire show was to benefit Rats for Autism. Lots of people have kids or family members on the autism spectrum. So there was quite a bit of money collected. I never did get a total. But they generated a lot of money for that particular charity. So it was a great time had by all, and the weather cooperated too, which was also nice.
That's great. And you know, I wanted to cover something that's very interesting. I'm going to segue into how automakers are diversifying to make ends meet.
Why, yes.
General Motors has created its own ride-hailing platform and quietly built one of the largest charging stations in the U.S. in San Francisco area.
Ride-hailing?
Yes, to get Cruise self-driving car units ready to enter the robo-taxi business next year. So here we go. It's robo-taxi.
Yes, that's where I want to try it on the hilliest
I am robo-taxi.
Well, if any place, Silicon Valley would be the place to roll it out for all the geeks down there.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and if one crashes, it only takes out a bunch of
ex-hippies. Exactly.
So it's not like
it would. Just end up in the sound.
That's right. Exactly. But it's like they're all going to the automated, they're all going electric, and they're trying to diversify and find the next way to make money. Because for a long time, it's been financing. And if you're not selling as many cars, you got to look at other ways of doing it. So I don't know if there's subsidies involved with this.
Oh, you know there
are.
You know there's anything that's involving energy or technology, there's some kind of
automated
subsidy.
Yes.
Okay. There's a subsidy.
Yeah, it is. And then the rise in the country of Japanese car manufacturing plants. When it comes to cars, Japanese companies are already assembling more than twice as many vehicles in the USA than they import from Japan.
Right.
That's a result. Yeah, it is. Yeah. That's a result of measures taken since 1980s when laid-off Detroit workers vented their frustrations by bashing Japanese cars with sledgehammers. Yeah. Japan-based automakers assembled 3.8 million vehicles in their U.S. factories in 2017, up from 296,000 and change in 1985.
And a lot of those displaced auto workers from Detroit
jobs.
So went to work for Honda building the cars here. You know, I mean, Honda's made the cars that Honda sells here are all made here anyway.
Yeah, Toyota.
Have been for years.
Toyota's made in California.
Yeah.
And on the flip side, Kawasaki does all their ATVs here.
Sure.
It only makes sense that would be the case. And it is good jobs. And a lot of these are actually in non-union states. But on the flip side, the cost of living is a lot less, too.
Yep. No, nothing wrong with that.
So
it's good business.
It is. It's a very good business.
And it's been pretty successful for Honda. Look at who's, you know, number one in a lot of different categories.
I mean, oh, yeah.
Making an excellent vehicle.
Well, in Toyota Tundra, still a really...
Yep.
Very competitive. All aluminum and all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Shane, what have you guys been working on up there at the shop?
That's, at E-Company, you got a couple.
Got E-Company Customs.
We got a pretty full house right now. We got a 53 88 in there. We got a 57 Chevy. What else we got?
That's that pearl painted one. That's a nice looking car.
And that car was painted in 1962.
Yeah, when the only color pearl you could
get was that bluish purple
gray.
Color.
Yeah. That was great.
And we got a Buick went into paint, so that's going to be assembled here shortly.
Ooh,
yeah.
And for those who don't know, that pearl is actually a real crushed mother
real
of pearl.
Pearl, oh, yeah. Yep.
A lot of oysters gave their lives for that car.
It's amazing how
did they use oyster or abalone?
I don't know.
Because abalone has that rainbow.
For the crushing.
It does.
But the
62, I wasn't yet born.
No.
I was. What they crushed.
I was divorced from my first wife in 60. No.
I was three.
Well, it is a beautiful car, that's for sure. The You got a 34 something up there, don't you?
We got a 37.
37, that's it. The one that's up on the lift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting exhaust work done on it still.
That's a nice looking car, too.
Yeah. A lot of work. Stainless exhaust all the way back, all custom made. Well,
now, weren't you guys getting ready to rebuild the car for Jim Green?
Yes. It's still in the works.
Oh,
so
still in the works. Okay.
He wrecked his, the 53 in there is his, and he wrecked it leaving the shop the other day.
Oops.
So we're putting a new bumper on it.
Okay.
And fixing the front fender.
All right. Well,
getting his daily driver back to the road first.
Yep.
And speaking of Jim Green's, we, as the three of us, need to set up an appointment to go up there and video shoot. He's got his own little museum.
It's not little.
It's not little.
It's not little.
It's no. Pretty good size.
No.
And we want to interview him, too, because he is a legend for those in the Puget Sound area. Built many a race car, race engines, and definitely a legend here. And now of his health, and he's closed down his shop. But
aren't you guys involved in rebuilding the Green Elephant?
Yes.
Yeah.
The Green Elephant.
So that's a legendary car around the Pacific Northwest.
Championship car.
Yeah, but of course it was a national car too, but the Green Elephant Vega was a standout in the 60s and 70s.
Back when drag racing was all the thing. It kind of go hands in hands.
Yeah. Everybody all about horsepower.
All about horsepower. You'd go out, you'd hang out. The kids were racing on the streets, and then they'd go down and watch the big guys down at the track on Saturday and Sunday. And that was a whole era. 60s, 70s was, to me, like the peak era. Now it's all corporate. And I have nothing against drag racing, but unless you're a corporate sponsor, you can't drag race.
No.
Not at that level.
No.
They still have smaller levels, though, the local levels where they can do it. So
I love the guys that with no paint jobs. Like, there's a guy racing on his own wall.
That's right.
Yep, that's it.
That's right.
So stay right here for more Horsepower Chrome and Rust. That's these messages.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, how would you like to have a chance to win a fully restored, four-on-the-floor, red 1965 Mustang? Well, you can. Linwood Rotary is raffling off this fully restored 65 Mustang at a car show near you. Chance to win this car is just $10 per raffle ticket. For more information and to find out where the car will be displayed, visit rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. Proceeds will go into funding local charities.
Get ready. It's coming. The 18th annual Edmunds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is happening September 9th, 2018. And yeah, you heard right. For the first time ever, classic motorcycles are included. If you have a hot rod, a rat rod, classic, custom, vintage car, truck, or motorcycle, this is the show for you. All vehicles must be 30 years old or older. That's 1988. This festival of steel and chrome will fill the streets of downtown Edmunds on Sunday, the 9th of September. It's a season-ending show, and it's all free to see. The streets will be lined with vendors, food, fun for the family, a pinup pageant by the Electric Pinup Dolls, and many special guests and one-of-a-kind customs. All new trophies and music from Danny Vernon. Register your entry at the Edmunds Chamber website or call direct. Pre-registrations get the best locations, so get on it right now. Still, just $25 per vehicle, as always. The Edmunds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is coming to cap the summer car show season. Why leave town when the fun is right here? Go to EdmundsClassicCarShow.com or call the Edmunds Chamber of Commerce. Crank up your ride and we'll see you there.
Hello, this is Zach with Cascade Campers. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
Sensory sensitivity, repetitious behavior, lack of eye contact. You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
More Horsepower Chrome and Rust after these messages.
Hey all you guys and gals, the next time you're hankering for a trip down memory lane, we recommend a visit to our older than the hill Chateau d'Ismel Resort in Boondocks, Idaho, where the rooms smell like week-old cigarette smoke and month-old beer. Every weekend during the summer months, we feature our Old Maid Punkle Run, Gooder Trash Clam Bake, and Big Ted's Keg Toss. And don't forget our complimentary Bloody Mary morning appetizers to chase away those late night reveries. Sure enough, when you want to travel back and enjoy those old biker smell, then come to stay at Chateau d'Ismel, where our two mascots, Pit and Bull, will greet you at the gate and where we never leave the lights on. Because, hey, after all, we're going green. Chateau d'Ismel, because nothing beats the old days of smoky bars, stale beer, and crap on the carpet than a visit to Chateau d'Ismel. And for those who don't know how to spell Chateau de Smell, that's okay. We made it easy for you. It's smellit.com.
Well, welcome back to the third segment of the show, and this week we are in the studio with Joel Blackstock from Sound Advice, who can put the tunes into anything with wheels. That includes rat rods, street rods, customs, probably motorcycles, and more. So, hi, Joel. Thanks for coming in tonight.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You bet. And I think you met up with Brady.
We ran into each other up at the cruise in Nicobe.
Absolutely.
And I said, "Oh, this, you know, we've got to have you come down here." Mostly because, you know, you had some things up there on display, and I just suddenly was hit with the idea. You know, there's got to be a really cool sound system you could put into something really, really small and still be able to, you know, break windows if you needed to. But before we get to that, how long have you been doing Sound Advice? I mean, are you local or is there branches and chapters?
It is one shop.
One shop.
I've been there for a year and a half. I'm a co-owner.
Right.
But car audio has been my passion.
Yeah. You did audio for another company before, yes?
I did.
Yeah. How did you get started in this altogether?
As soon as I got my first Honda Civic, I put a subwoofer and I was hooked.
That's all it takes.
Nothing like driving down the freeway with bumps.
Yeah. Yeah. And
now, did you rattle all the metalwork loose?
It didn't sound good. I thought it was cool, though.
that's always so funny. It's like you roll up next to him, and it's like, boom, 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 boom.
Everything's vibrating.
Yeah. And my son, what did he do with his truck? He went out and bought himself a subwoofer. I'm like, son, we needed to put in a stereo speakers first. But we are going to be redoing his truck here at the end of summer. So tell us a little bit about what you do. What sets you apart from everybody else in the area?
So we're in Evergreen Way. One shop, four people, we're all owners. The product we put out is far above our competition. Our system, I think, is what sets us apart.
You know, how's that work?
We're not on commission.
Okay.
We're not racing for the next set of keys like a lot of our big box competitors.
Yeah.
We really care about what we do. So I would say that's where our product.
So when you put a sound system in somebody's vehicle, I'm kind of assuming, I mean, I'm getting from what you say, that sort of anything is fair game. I mean, there's really no sort of project that you might turn down. But what's kind of the, if I'm a guy who has a stock sound system in my car and I want something better, do you start with power? Do you start with speakers? Do you start with insulation? Do you start with placement? Do you start? I mean, what's the way to make that happen? Assuming that money is not necessarily an object. I mean, I'm not unlimited budget.
Those are all factors.
Yeah.
You know, obviously you want to deaden the panels. You want to have correct placement, airspace. They're all definitely factors.
Yeah. Is there a way to get really, really great sound without spending an arm and a leg?
Yes. I mean, honestly, all you need is two speakers and a subwoofer to have a full, rich sound.
Okay.
That's all you need, really.
How much of a caution is it that the vehicle be relatively sound? I mean, what I mean by is there's not a lot of stuff to vibrate in the vehicle.
It's important.
And you test, I'm assuming, when you've done an installation, so.
Absolutely. So we'll do test tones and do sweeps to find the different rattles at different frequencies, and we'll try to eliminate those. Sometimes there's just no eliminating them.
let's say you take a pickup truck. What kind of thing would you do with a pickup truck?
So given we have space, you know, we'd want to put a subwoofer, maybe some 6x9s up front, definitely an amplifier. If it's an older pickup truck, you know, a new head unit. Some of the new head units in the new vehicles it really complicates things because the engineering has gone downhill to where they put an EQ curve behind the EQ curve, if you will, to make their cheap speakers sound good. The race to zero is, you know, so a head unit's very important, especially in the new vehicles.
Now, what is a head unit? Is that just the amplifier or the actual stereo?
The stereo.
Okay.
The source unit.
Now, back in the day.
Well, it seems to me you would replace that the first thing.
Absolutely. That's the foundation.
That's
what we wanted. Some, you know, Some of the hot rod guys, they don't want a new aftermarket head unit. So we can do what's like a Bluetooth amp. So you can Bluetooth directly to it. It can be hidden away. And then you just have your speakers showing. Or we can try and mask those with grill cloth or something to blend in.
So back in the, you said something that, that I wanted to ask about. Back in the day, it used to be that you could buy, for this is for home stereo now, but I think the same thing probably applies in car audio. You used to be able to buy monitors or speakers, and the difference was that a monitor was supposedly something that reproduced sound audio flat, whereas a speaker had some sort of electronic coloration. So different speakers sounded different because they each had their own sort of electronic personality, whereas a monitor was like a reference.
Absolutely.
Does that make sense?
It does.
So what you're saying when you talk about the different head units, the EQ behind the EQ, you're kind of, it sounds to me like you're saying the same sort of thing. You, if you want pure sound, something that is, you know, reference quality flat, the head unit makes a lot of difference.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. On most the new head units, you'll have mid-bass and treble, which you can adjust.
Sure.
Right.
But behind that, there's a curve that the engineers have found that makes their cheap $7 speaker sound optimal.
Oh,
right, exactly.
So when you're going to do an upgrade, then, because when I was a kid, I mean, I was the first on the block to have a little, it got a great gas mileage, little four-door 1800, but I put in the Jensen triaxles, the super tuner, and the power amp, and my thing cranked. And then later on, I got a Honda in the 80s, late 80s, and I built my own box with a couple Boston Acoustics, and I put an amplifier and a nice stereo, and that thing could blow most anything off the road because I built the enclosure and had it really nice. So it is really a lot of it. It's the enclosures. It's how you're able to do what you're able to do. But those were spendy speakers. We're talking hundreds of dollars. Is it still that same way?
The equipment's very expensive. They can get. So a lot of the cheaper speakers are meant to be to sound good on axis in a display case.
Right.
Where the more expensive, nicer sounding speakers are going to cost a little more, but they're meant to sound good off axis. So the speaker placement,
no matter where,
isn't as important.
Yeah.
And so they add a lot of flexibility to the install.
Okay.
Now there's also a certain amount of, I guess I'm going to call it color, sort of sound color. You can have volume, but if there's distortion with it, then it's actually going to be, at some level, sort of painful to listen to. Whereas if you have clear, clean sound, you can listen to it a lot louder without causing yourself some actual hearing damage. And I hear a lot of those guys going down the street, you know, that are just pounding the windows and shaking the frames. That's probably causing them some damage just in the search for, I want the biggest bass bump.
Absolutely. I don't know what the exact number is as far as the decibel range where hearing damage starts, but
it's 110.
Is it?
Yeah, well, yeah. It's so 110.
We just did a bass competition at Dream Builders.
Yeah.
And there was guys hitting 155, 160 decibels. So, you know, prolonged exposure to that is definitely causing
some. Kind of like a lot of the guys that drive around with rat rods. Probably 150 dBs on your
open exhaust.
Exhaust.
But shit, it's all about the quality of the sound, though. I mean, I spent years and years in the radio business, and I spent a lot of time listening to one headphone because that was kind of what you did. But the sound pressure and quality out of a headphone is way different from an open ear.
Yes, it is.
And it's because of that that I have, you know, some damage, you know, on one of my ears because, it, you know, that sound was not pure. It was not real well engineered. And so you can do some serious damage at a fairly low decibel rating with that kind of thing. And obviously what you guys do, I know at Sound Advice, is you want the clearest and cleanest sound you can get.
So do you, you were saying with the cloth, are you able to, Shane works with a lot of fab, are you able to actually, let's say a panel doesn't have a speaker, are you able to go in there and retrofit a panel and put actual cloth over it and stuff like that?
Absolutely.
So then you don't even really realize that there's a speaker there.
We can totally hide it, you know, given that there's enough space, you know, and kick panels quite a bit. We'll do that. We'll make a fiberglass mold, then we'll hide the speaker behind it and then grill cloth over it so it all blends in.
Nice.
Oh, very good. That's more than what a lot of the box stores will do.
Right. No.
They won't do that.
Well, they want to make particle board enclosures.
Every car is different, but it's all solutions based and then what the customer's looking for, willing to give up, because ultimately space is a factor.
Yes.
Sure. Well, now, I was going to ask this because a lot of guys who have, you know, either a pickup or a rat rod or something that doesn't have a lot maybe of insulation, maybe they're looking at all metal body panels, and the only place you've got in a pickup cab, especially one of the older ones, that you can really hide stuff is the box under the seat. And, you know, you can hang a speaker in the cab, but it's going to be visible unless you build some kind of an enclosure. So space is a premium. And then you're not looking at the greatest, you know, reverberation stuff. I mean, metal. So in a situation like that, what would you recommend a guy that had that sort of a situation?
That's a rough one.
I mean, the head unit's going to have to be small, even if it goes behind the dash.
So, like, the smallest system where you're going to get a full sound would be a Bluetooth amp and 2 6x9s because they play the largest spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I'd probably say start there.
Okay.
Would you make an enclosure behind the, like with my El Camino, there's a little tray back there, and a lot of guys would just build the box and put it up underneath there and mount it. So now you've got a wood box, could be covered with vinyl or whatever, but it's now built back there, and you got the 2 6x9s with your amplifier, and it's plenty loud that way. Is that what you would try to do, is build an enclosure that fits in there, or...
We will definitely try, and that's what we want to do. If okay. the customer's going to pay us to do that,
okay.
that's what we're going to yeah. go for.
So, I mean, obviously, it's nice to be able to say, it doesn't matter what it costs, just make it sound good.
Absolutely.
But the reality is a little different, you know. So sometimes guys are going to come in and say, I've got $500, I've got $1,000, I've got $1,500. You know, at those price points, are you going to be able to do something that's going to sound great?
We will do the best we can yeah. to get them down the road. You know, we don't stock anything we wouldn't use in our own vehicles.
Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of stuff out there we would not even touch and allow in our store.
By the way, what's your website that people can check you out?
We are at www.soundadvicewa.com.
Okay. soundadvicewa.com. Yep. Very good. And we'll post that on our podcast and our other stuff. So there's four of you guys that operate this.
Four of us, yes.
And are you guys keeping very busy?
We are. We're actually taking a week off. This is our summer vacation.
Nice. Very good.
So we're doing well enough to do that. We're going to take some time and enjoy some of the summer and then get back at it.
Now, nice. Do you also do boats?
We do boats, motorcycles.
I've discovered that boats, ATVs, they put the whole sound banks on these things, and now you're cranking, and the guy in the back that's water skiing can be listening to AC/DC at 150 decibels, and that seems like the big thing now.
It is. We do a lot of boats, and they're a lot of fun to work on.
I bet you there's a challenge with motorcycles, because there's really space, you know, space poor there. You know, what am I trying to say? The fairings are, there's a limited amount of space there, and yeah. you can put speakers, I suppose, behind the driver in the head cap of the saddlebags, I suppose.
We actually have a lot of solutions for motorcycles.
Do you?
Now. We do. There's some brands out there that have, Arc Audio being one of them.
Yeah.
They have packages for all the Harleys, pretty much.
Sure.
Then there's custom bags. Bikes are fun, too.
And they're all waterproof.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing. You can do that with both. So there you go with a rat rod. Would you say, oh, it's open? There's no cover. They want some tunes. You'd probably say, well, let's look at the water.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I've got a Harley. The system in my fairing is a Jensen Marine, you know, so it's a 200 watt, and it's all waterproof. I mean, it's got to be because it's out in the weather.
Yeah, yep. We just did a waterproof kicker system.
Yeah.
Hit my mic down?
Yeah.
Hello. Yeah, we just did a waterproof kicker
you weren't
system
say anything,
in a
right?
K5 Blazer.
Okay.
And okay.
We just all across the back of the roll bars, same as boats, and it's all yeah. waterproof and out in the open.
So what's typically the time frame on putting a system in where there wasn't one before? Just ballpark. I mean, I know that's kind of, but let's talk your basic couple of 6x9s and a head unit and an amp and stuff like that.
So just on a basic install, you're talking an hour and a half, 2 hours on speakers.
Okay.
And about the same for a head unit. That's basic. If we're getting custom, honestly,
yeah.
that's really hard to tell without
yeah.
having a specific vehicle in mind.
Okay. Obviously, you know, everything is kind of a one-off, which is really nice. Well, that's cool. I know that that going up to the shop would be a really rewarding experience. We are going to put your website and stuff on the Facebook page along with us. And Joel Blackstock, thanks for coming in. Sound Advice is the name of his company, and he's a co-owner with the other three guys. And if you want to take a look at this, make sure you check our Facebook page once the show gets posted. We will put pictures and links to Joel's shop. and you guys can get some serious sound in your ride. Joel, thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Stay right here for this week's trivia question and more Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
For all your parts cleaning needs, turn to Ravenstone Vapor Honing. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is a fast, economical, safe alternative to standard media blasting. Ravenstone Vapor Honing uses a system developed by Rolls-Royce back in 1944. A water-based cleaning system that restores parts back to factory condition with no scouring or heating to metal or damage to rubber and plastic parts. Ravenstone Vapor Honing is located in Snohomish, Washington. RavenstoneVaporHoning.com. Redefining the way parts restoration is done.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life. Young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Hey everyone, Steve Johann here, producer of the Horsepower Chrome and Rust Show. If any of you have ever thought about or ridden a motorcycle, then I want to invite you to listen to a new show called World of Motorcycling, where we cover rider culture and the motorcycling world. World of Motorcycling is an informative and entertaining podcast featuring John Davis, Walt Fletcher, and me, Steve Johann. You can listen to the show at worldofmotorcycling.podomatic.com, where we'll be waiting for you.
Get ready, it's coming. The 18th annual Edmunds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is happening September 9th, 2018. And yeah, you heard right. For the first time ever, classic motorcycles are included. If you have a hot rod, a rat rod, classic, custom, vintage car, truck, or motorcycle, this is the show for you. All vehicles must be 30 years old or older. That's 1988. This festival of steel and chrome will fill the streets of downtown Edmonds on Sunday, the 9th of September. It's a season-ending show, and it's all free to see. The streets will be lined with vendors, food, fun for the family, a pinup pageant by the Electric Pinup Dolls, and many special guests and one-of-a-kind customs. All new trophies and music from Danny Vernon. Register your entry at the Edmonds Chamber website or call direct. Pre-registrations get the best locations, so get on it right now. Still, just $25 per vehicle, as always. The Edmonds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show is coming to cap the summer car show season. Why leave town when the fun is right here? Go to EdmundsClassicCarShow.com or call the Edmunds Chamber of Commerce. Crank up your ride and we'll see you there.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go fish, Dad!
Oh, come on!
This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. It only takes a moment.
This is Elton Roundhill and Shane Osborne with E Company Customs in Linwood, Washington. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
This is Cody with Bow Wow Air Cooled. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
This is Robert with Bonbrunner Motorsport. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
Welcome back to the fourth segment of the show. This is Horsepower Chrome and Rust, where we share all kinds of hot rod stories. Brady, what kind of hot rod story do you got for us?
Oh, I got your hot rod story right
I
here.
I like hot rod
I got
stories.
Your hot rod story.
Yeah,
right
yeah.
Here. This is, as usual, one from the old Car Nut book. David Dickinson has put together a collection of some magical stuff. And this one is from book one. And it's a story that we've had several stories by Jim Muckenfuss before. This is another one of his. This one's called A Ride to Remember. And it goes like this. In 1978, I got a job at Busum Dotson in Cincinnati, Ohio, a year after I graduated high school and started as a mechanic doing pre-delivery preparation and inspections, undercoating, and whatever else I was asked to do, all for a whopping $4.50 an hour. The owner's son, John Busum, ran the place, and John was what I called a PhD, a Papa Has Dealership, and a bit of a horse's patoot. I got along okay with him, but for the most part, he was kind of a pain to deal with, and he always acted as though he was sort of above everybody else around him. So a year after I started, I moved up in the shop, I got a minor raise, and I purchased a 69 Camaro. It was a true SS, 396, four-speed car. It wasn't real pretty, but it sure could run. Now, John thought it was a piece of junk, and he reminded me almost daily. It's all noise, he used to say. He'd formed his attitude based on its well-worn appearance. What he didn't recognize was the simple, raw power that was expelled through the exhaust. All he heard was noise. Now, in 1980, Datsun installed a turbo on the 280ZX. The inline six-cylinder engine suddenly became a lot more powerful, and John thought these cars were the fastest things around. Now, I have to admit, they were fast, and they were fun to drive, but it was apparent that John hadn't been for a ride in a really fast car. He'd never taken a ride in my car. So one day, John decided to take some shoe polish out back and put a note on my window that read, $99 special today only. He took a Polaroid picture of it, and he gave it to me. Remember Polaroids? He laughed as he walked away. Sadly, this is the only picture I have of this car. I was really ticked off at first, but now I'm glad I have it. A couple of weeks later, he came back to the shop whistling to himself. He said, hey, what are you going to take me for a ride in the special? I was eager to get him in my passenger seat, and I said, well, let's go before you change your mind. We got in the car, and off we went. Leaving the parking lot, I turned right into heavy traffic on East Kemper Road, which was a major arterial and not a place for hijinks. Remember hijinks?
Yes.
Who uses that word anymore? But a quick 100 feet or so and around another right put us on Lippelman Road, which was a small two-lane street. I drove nice and easy, following the 35-mile-an-hour speed limit until the road came to a stop about three-quarters of a mile away. Turning right again, I made a quick left into a circular driveway of a large old house. We always use this turnaround for the short test drives. Exiting the driveway, quick right, and then a quick left, and we were back heading the way we came. Now, a quick note here. The 396 was not stock. It had a big cam, 3-inch headers, a 3-inch straight exhaust all the way back to the back bumper. This is why John always said, it's all noise. Just as I was about ready to walk his world, he half-yelled, see, I told you, at which point I put my foot through the floor and unleashed the full explosive power of the 396. It kicked the car into a hard fishtail to the right, which is exactly what I wanted. I held my foot to the floor while looking out the right side of the windshield, and I could kind of hear my passenger screaming something, but it didn't really care. When I slammed it into second gear, the force caused the rubber dash pad that covered the entire length of the dashboard to fly off into John's lap. Dang, I keep forgetting to replace those clips. The pad had also fallen onto the steering wheel, but I was too focused to stop now. Fishtailing to the left now, the screaming was getting much louder, but I still couldn't make it out very clearly. I slammed it into third, revving between the gears enough to go sideways one more time before shifting to fourth and coasting. Now, this all happened in a matter of seconds, but it must have given John time for his life to flash before his eyes. The scream had turned into a mild whimper as I reached over with my right hand and lifted the dash panel back into place. As you can imagine, we returned to the dealership rather quickly. Pulling back into the lot, I started to mock John, saying, yeah, it's all noise, right? John didn't hear a word of it. He jumped out of the car while it was still moving, rolled quickly, got back up, all in a nice suit, mind you. He ran into the showroom and didn't talk to me for 2 days. After that day, the man never got in a car with me again, which is what I had hoped would happen. I've not talked to John in over 25 years, but I know Busam Nissan is still there, and I guarantee you he still remembers that ride. Yes. How many times in your history have you inadvertently scared somebody into an inadvertent physical reaction?
I just did to Aaron a couple weeks ago.
Did you? Good for you. It's so nice to do those things.
Yes.
Was it in one of the cars from the shop?
It was. The GTX.
Oh, the GTX.
The GTX. Well, yes. That is kind of a bladder emptier.
Oh, yeah. It's all about torque and horsepower.
Yeah.
Well, did you guys finally get that all tuned up and running smooth? And
because I have happy as a clam.
Oh, excellent.
Very nice. Yep. Very nice.
It's at its own.
Well, as usual, this is yet another one of the Old Car Nut Book stories. Thanks to David Dickinson, who allows us to read them, and you can get it at theoldcarnutbook.com or through Evancourt Press. There are 3 books in the series, and they make a great gift.
You know, I was at the car show a couple weeks ago, and my son Noah was with me, and there was a 68 or 67. It was, I think, 68 Cuda.
A banana Cuda.
Yeah. And I said, you know, one of the fondest memories I have of just nasty horsepower was in high school. I think I was probably a sophomore in high school, and Larry Keller and myself and Ron Steinbeck and his brother, Elder Keller, and we were all hanging out, and his elder brother said, you can hang out in the car with me. And we would park across the street from the drive-in there in Ferndale. And it was kind of like, hey, there's somebody, and he would just hit the gas. He was already in first, and we would just take off. The gravel would be spraying behind us. We'd hit the pavement, and we'd be doing burnout all the way around, and he didn't look left or right. So, I mean, there wasn't like he was looking to see if there was cars coming. He just saw his buddy. And we were like that, and it was like a whole night of this where he got on it everywhere we went. And I'm like, I want this kind of raw power. It was the funnest night I can remember as a sophomore in high school was in that car because it had so much brute horsepower that I think he had a built 340 in that thing, and it just screamed. And it was like I was in my buddy's Polaris at a 383, and that was a lot of fun. And my other buddy's 396 SS, and we had a lot of fun in that. But I think that night was probably the funnest just because he was not afraid to just let loose anytime he felt like it, and that thing had the ability to do what it needed to do.
Nothing, you know, the replaces
excitement.
Cubes.
No, and just pure horsepower.
Yep.
And that four-speed just...
Well, and it's America, you know?
It was, and both the other cars were too. So I always dreamed of having a car that would, and, you know, you end up blowing up that engine too. And it was one of those kind of cars where you had succession.
Yep.
You know, and that was what people did. Blow up an engine, go build another one. Blow that one up, go build another one.
Yep. Get to the top end of whatever car you built and realize that you wanted to go faster, so you just needed a different car.
Yep.
Yes.
My buddy with the 57 Chevy in high school with a 396 in it that he just built to the wall.
Yep.
Great car. He couldn't make it go any faster safely.
Too big.
So he sold it and bought a 440 Coronet with the 426 Racing in it. And it's like, okay, so you stepped it up, did you?
There you go.
Yeesh.
And those Coronets didn't really have, they were out still, no probably power steering. It was still manual. And
yep.
That's one thing about those cars. So.
It was a frightening car.
It was, but fun.
Oh, yeah.
Horsepower, chrome.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, how would you like to have a chance to win a fully restored four-on-the-floor red 1965 Mustang? Well, you can. Linwood Rotary is raffling off this fully restored 65 Mustang at a car show near you. Chance to win this car is just $10 per raffle ticket. For more information and to find out where the car will be displayed, visit rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. rotaryoflinwood.com/car-raffle. Proceeds will go into funding local charities.
When you want the latest news and information related to the Canadian motorcycling scene, then turn to BeltDriveBetty.com, your trusted source for all things motorcycling. BeltDriveBetty.com, serving the Canadian motorcycling scene since 2003.
Hang on till right after these messages.
Do you suffer from gastrointestinal anguish after eating spicy foods at your local Mexican restaurant? Do you suffer outrageous amounts of flatulence after eating greasy foods at your local fast food joint? Do you suffer from acid reflux after ingesting copious amounts of alcoholic beverages at your local drinking hole? Then call the law offices of Ambulance and Chaser at 1-800-782-5377, where we've helped thousands of so-called victims just like yourself. If you call us today at 1-800-782-5377, we'll make sure to send you out our free guide, The Top 20 Medical Issues Most Likely to Be Sued Over. But act today, because the longer you wait, the less chance you have to win your case. The law offices of Ambulance and Chaser are making the most out of your misery. Please be advised, a law firm of Ambulance and Chaser is not licensed to practice law in all 50 states and may be called into question by the federal government for questionable practices.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit the Shelter Pet Project.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
Welcome back to the fifth and the final segmento of the show. Oh, this is the Around the Wheel segmento where we talk about events and rallies in the club scene and all kinds
good
of other
good bass playing
cool
on
stuff.
That, by the way, Brady.
You like that?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Must have had the B string there.
I did.
Yeah.
And we also have the weekly trivia question, which last week, we asked a tough one. The question from the week before was, when would power windshield wipers become standard equipment? And we knew that. And then this week's question was, when were the first power windows introduced?
Oh.
Power windows was actually not that much behind power windshield wipers, except there weren't any vacuum-powered windows. As Shane pointed out last week, there were hydraulic-powered
windows.
That's
right.
But that isn't what the deal was. These were actually electric-powered windows, and this week we did not get a winner, so apparently it was too complicated a question for people, so we're not going to give away a bucket of barn finds dirt, but the answer was 1946. The first power windows were introduced in 1946.
And which model?
Don't know. Doesn't give me that information, but I have
really?
I have a sneaking suspicion that it was Chrysler, only because it was in that segment of the car stuff that I picked
you
up.
You know, interestingly enough, my neighbor Greg Lee, who was a kid that I grew up with, and we would come home. His dad bought a Plymouth Fury. I think it was probably a early 70s.
Yeah.
And it had power windows. Because my dad was the kind of guy that just got the plain Jane cars and did not get the power anything.
Yeah.
He said, son, that's going to be the first thing that goes wrong with a car. So I do not need it. He had just bought himself a 70 Dodge Polaris station wagon with a 400 in it. But it had the crank windshield window.
I prefer crank windows myself.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
I kind of like the power windows. I mean, it's more to break.
My Mazda
18,
our Mazda truck 92 has got the crank.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, so again, no winner this week, but next week's question, oh, we got a good one. And this is actually going to be easy. This is not going to be one that you can look up on Google.
Well, maybe.
I don't think so.
I'm going to try it.
I think you should. The question for this week is, what was the date, the exact date, mind you, of the very first Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust show?
Oh, yes.
When was our first show? You can find it. Of course you can, but it won't be Googleized. So you come up with that one. We'll give you the answer next week. And yet again, we will give away another bucket of barn find dust to some lucky winner. And
you know,
see.
There's a couple of big shows coming around later in the year, and one of them is the Edmunds Car Show.
The Edmunds Classic Car and Motorcycle Show this year, that's true. It is going to be
motorcycles.
Yeah, it's the first year that, after 18 years, it's the first year that they've decided to add classic motorcycles, so they have to be 30 years old or older. So that's 1988. I can't believe 1988 was 30 years ago.
Wow.
But, it's going to be really nice. And for those who are not familiar with it, it is on September the 9th. It is the same weekend as the Rod Run to the End of the World, so people always have to make a choice. But it's a great show, covers six square blocks in downtown Edmonds. The cars are all out. The
weather's always
good, too.
The
weather is usually just magnificent.
Yep.
And it's about 350, 400 cars or so. We are going to have a pinup pageant this year. The electric pinup dolls are going to be there.
That'll be cool.
Doing a pageant. And Danny Vernon is going to do his tribute to Elvis, and he always does an excellent job. And let's see. We got some really nice special guests coming. I believe David Dickinson will be there again this year selling his old Car Nut books. So it's going to be a winner. Starts at 10 o'clock, ends at 5. It's a great day, and it's going to be a tremendous one this year.
And there's plenty of little eateries and stuff right down there in beautiful downtown Edmonds. And there's always parking. You can
bet.
Just park up the street, and there's plenty of parking.
And we're going to have a little three-wheeled tricycle version of the Italian gelato guy.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be very cool. Plus, the Boy Scouts come down and they do a Pinewood Derby, so something for the kids as well.
And we'll have a booth there, too.
Yeah, that's right. Music's our cue to hit the gas. Thanks to our guest, Joel Blackstock from Sound Advice. Like and follow our website and do all that cool stuff, and we will be ever grateful to you. For Shane Osborne and Steve Johann, I'm Brady Wright, saying keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and your foot to the floor. Slide on by next week for another edition of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.